You're listening to We're Only Human, hosted by Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. We're Only Human focuses and highlights how modern technology and new ways of working are creating a more people-centric workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.h3hr.com.
Hey, this is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. I'm honored to have you with us here today, and I'm going to be delivering presentations in the next few weeks on measurement metrics, evidence-based management, HR strategy, and more. In addition, we're doing some really cool research here at Lighthouse on talent analytics, internal mobility, and the neuroscience of learning. Shaping up to be a great year, and we're really excited about what's on the horizon. But with that, let's talk about today's show. Books. So a 2015 study from Pew Research said that about 1 in 4 Americans didn't read a single book in the preceding 12 months for the survey. Books are something that I appreciate and believe in as a powerful tool for self-directed learning, but they can really be so much more than that. In this episode, I interview Zach Rubin, co-founder of PPC Guru. We discuss books, learning, and how to create a culture that reinforces performance and key behaviors. It's a great conversation. I know you're going to enjoy it. As a longtime book lover, I can't wait to share this with you. So without further ado, enjoy my conversation with Zach. All right, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of We're Only Human. I'm really excited today because we get to talk about one of the things that's near and dear to my heart. We have Zach Rubin with us today. He's a kindred spirit and, dare I say it, a fellow nerd book lover. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Ben. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So we're going to talk a little about books today as a development tool, as something that we both believe in pretty strongly as a tool to help people get better, smarter, faster in the workplace. So to just kind of prime the pump a little bit, tell me the last book that you read.
Yeah, Ben, the book I'm currently reading or really rereading is a book called Getting Things Done by David Allen. It's a very popular book. I think it first came out in 2000 and just came out again in 2015, which is why I'm reading it again. It's basically about how to get the most out of personal productivity, how to actually track all of your tasks and keep them organized. And the title of the book is Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. And it sounds a little bit corny, but it's almost a philosophy of how to manage your schedule, how to manage your tasks and your inbox and everything that's coming into you, and then actually managing those so you can get things done and have a clear mind to accomplish the goals that you have set out. And so it sounds a little esoteric, but it's very well written and really something that's useful for anyone, whether they're just starting their career or a senior leader. And frankly, one of those books that if you can get everyone on your team to read, you can really get a lot of extra energy and efficiency that way too by getting everyone on the same page with it.
Yeah, that's one of those that you read and you quickly realize, like, hey, I've got a system for this, a system for that. You quickly realize that there are better ways, again, just said a minute ago, better, smarter, faster ways to get things done in a more productive way, a very highly efficient process. And some of the things I've taken from Mr. Allen and incorporated into my work, but I was joking with you the other day, I still have quite a long way to go towards juggling all the things that I have on the agenda and trying to do a better job about that. In terms of the last book that I read, it was Goodnight Moon. I read that last night to my 2-year-old, which is funny. I've read it to each of the kids so far and was able to town for overnight trip, and he wanted me to read it for bed. I didn't have it, but I was able to recite it from heart, thank goodness. So we were able to get our Goodnight Moon fix in for the night. But what I'm personally reading is a book I picked up at the library the other day called The Heart and the Fist, and it's a story, sort of guy that spent some time in college going out doing humanitarian missions and work in the field, seeing these things going on around the world. Genocide and all these other really terrible things. And he realized that all the nice, good, healthy, happy things that we try to do for these other countries, sometimes it doesn't work without having some strength behind it. So I'm just getting to the point in the book now where he's about to join the Navy SEALs and become a part of that elite team to go out and help people in a more forceful way. But it's really looking at how to balance The Heart and the Fist, which is the title of the book. So it's been really an interesting book so far, telling his story and where he's going in life. And I'm enjoying it
enjoying it much more than I thought I would, actually. I've picked it up kind of on a whim and have really kind of lost myself in it over the last couple of nights, so I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about you and what you do every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So my company is called PBC Guru. It stands for Professional Book Club Guru. And really, we're a virtual book club management service that empowers continuous learning for individuals and organizations. And basically what that means is we work with companies to implement and manage virtual book clubs that help employees read more professional development books and develop a shared language with their colleagues. And our real value add is that we fully manage these programs for companies so that staff get the benefits of participating without taking away from busy HR and organizational development resources.
Things in there that you touched on right there that I think is one of the most important parts that I don't hear other people talk about very much is that shared language. Will you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's the old saying that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And a shared language is really the first or one of the first steps to developing a positive culture. And it's culture building is difficult, and companies spend a lot of money, a lot of effort, and a lot of time doing that. But there are certain books that speak to, and Getting Things Done is actually a good example, because it talks about not just how do you organize your email inbox, but it also talks about how do you develop a personal ethic of if you agree to do something, you're going to accomplish it and you're going to follow up on it. And if you ask someone else to do it, you expect the same thing. And it's about building a culture of getting things done and working effectively and actually planning your life and your work and your schedule. And again, culture building is a very complicated topic, but having everyone read the same book and have a conversation about it and have that same language and literally the same vocabulary that they can talk about and say, you know, in this book they talk about this and it ties into our core value, and that means that we should probably make this move instead of doing something different, helps to develop that culture.
Excellent. That's one of the – I was hoping that was the direction you were going to go, because I've talked about that in the past. I've written about it in the past. One of the things – I'd started a company a couple years ago. They had an amazing, wonderful culture, and that was one of the things I quickly learned is they had different sayings that meant different things, and coming in, I had no idea what a lot of them meant. And they were just because the people there had worked together through some really tough times and things, so they just developed this camaraderie and this shared verbiage that – told I didn't get it, but then once I understood those things, I actually incorporated them into our onboarding program. So when new employees would come in, I had kind of a cheat sheet on our dictionary, our language, the things that we say. Hey, by the way, you're probably going to hear this term sometime in the next week or two, and here's what it means, and here's when you should use it, and when it's appropriate to help those new people kind of get a feel for what the culture's like, what we believe in, what's important to us, to help them. Again, have their little Rosetta Stone to understand what those key things are from day one, instead of hoping that they pick it up over time and maybe losing something in translation. So I definitely agree that the culture piece is really important for me. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm a firm believer in really hammering that home. And I like the idea of using books, using a shared learning experience to help create that shared language so that people are on the same page, people understand the same kind of things. There's a company based in Nashville, Tennessee that has a required reading program for their employees when they start. And I can't remember, there are four or five books in there, but that's one of the things I've heard the CEO talk about. He said, when someone reads these books, you know, I don't go through and check off every page they're reading. You know, we trust them that they're going to read these things, but we can quickly tell afterwards if they've read it, processed it, and understood it, because they will be using those same kind of words and things from the book. Or, you know, if they're talking about the right seats on the bus, you know what book they've read. If they're talking about elements of the Getting Things Done philosophy, you know what book they've read, so that we can see it in their actions if they've actually done that. So taking it beyond a shared language to a shared sort of response or a shared behavior, even, it's just an interesting way of looking at that at a deeper level. Because one of the things I want to talk to you about is, gave you a heads up on it because I know this was something right in your lane recently I had heard a study that ranked types of training tools, and books and published materials were actually ranked pretty low on the list in terms of usage and effectiveness. And I know I don't personally believe that they're not that valuable, but just to play devil's advocate a little bit, some people might think that books as a tool are static or they're old fashioned or they're too much work to invest in that. What would you say in defense of books as a training tool?
Yeah, I think a couple things, Ben, and you had sent me some of those numbers and the questions, so I was able to give that a little bit of thought, and it certainly was interesting. I think number one, it's not surprising to me at all that a low percentage of people's training comes from reading. That's part of why our company exists, to help people hold themselves accountable and stick to a set schedule so they actually get the benefits from reading more often. And I think a lot of that is just people tend to want to read in their own time, in the evenings, on the weekends. And actually making time for that and making it a priority is difficult unless you for a lot of people, it's difficult unless you've really got a set schedule and you've made a commitment, which is part of what a book club does for people. The lower effectiveness scores really do surprise me. I think it's really fair to say that books are effective for developing certain skills, things like leadership, communication, management, thinking creatively. But a lot of training and learning is either more technical or it's very compliance-related, meaning you shall do this in this situation. And reading a book, I once was trying to learn to build websites and read a book about coding. I didn't actually do any coding until I finished reading the book. I sat down at the computer at the terminal and started trying to write some code, and I had no idea what I was doing. Reading the book was not helpful at all in that situation. But again, a book on how to have a difficult conversation with people or build an effective presentation, there's a lot of value there. So I think saying, are books great for all development? The answer is certainly no, but they're very effective for certain, frankly, hard to train for skills that other types of learning and development programs typically are not that effective with.
Very interesting. It's interesting to hear that angle on it, because I hadn't stopped to think about the difference of like hard technical skills versus soft skills training and how that breakdown looks. But looking back over the books that I've enjoyed, that I've learned something from, the ones that are, I don't know if you're like me, but the ones that are on my shelf with 40 sticky notes, sticking out of the spine because I've got all these important pages marked out, all of those that are related to that were focused on soft skills or things that are hard to measure, or what might not be something that I'm going to go, coding is your example. But it's interesting to stop and think about that. I think that's really a good point to make about the value they can bring. And the thing at the same time, you think about the training people put together around issues like leadership or other soft skills, innovation, creativity, things that they think are important. And that training they're taking the time to put together and trying to develop might actually better serve by finding a really good book on the topic and letting people go through that together, understanding, because the value I find in a lot of books is in being able to find those stories. Other people have seen the same challenges and overcome them, and being able to use those stories to help navigate your way through something, whether it's a leadership challenge, it's a change management sort of initiative, whatever those might be. Being able to use those success stories from others is really a valuable tool. It reminds me, one of my favorite quotes, I don't know if you've ever heard this one, but you're welcome to steal it. Charlie Tremendous Jones, he said, "You'll be the same person in 5 years as you are today, except for the people you meet and the books you read." And I've always kept that, near and dear to my heart, because I think we have the ability to shape and influence who we're going to be in the future. If we go back to your point, if we are willing to take that time and invest it in those sorts of resources to make us better, it doesn't take a $10,000 course, and a college degree. You can go to the library and get some of those books and get started tomorrow if you had to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So anybody that's followed me for a while knows that I read a lot. I review a lot. I bet in your line of work, you're reading a lot as well. So I know I have some of my own favorites. I can make a point to list them in the show notes, but what are you seeing from your clients? What books are the most popular from the people that are working with you for the book clubs?
Yeah, great question. Well, Ben, I guess the first thing I'll say is each of our book clubs is different. So each company we work with, we're talking with them about what kind of culture are they trying to build, what kind of shared language, and really what are their goals. So if someone says they want their employees or their staff to think more creatively, in what way? Is it to develop new tools? Is it to help clients solve challenges? And that's going to affect the kind of books we're recommending. That said, though, there certainly are some books that work well across all different types of groups, whether it's a group that's open to everyone in a company, a group just for young professionals or just for managers. One that certainly comes to mind is Crucial Conversations. That's a book that really covers how to have difficult conversations and how to effectively make conversations safe and meaningful and actually achieve the goals that you want to have out of those conversations. So especially for managers, it's critical. But even for young professionals or people who need to have a conversation with their manager or a client about something maybe not going the right way, it's just a critical skill set. And there's a lot of places people go wrong in those conversations that result in them going poorly. And this book really covers a lot of the ground of how to improve there.
Okay. Not to put you on the spot, but can you give me like one or two more? Because I personally have never read Conversations. I've heard other people recommend it. And so now I've got to add it to my must read list. What's another one or two that you run across? Because as you're talking about these, I'm kind of tabulating my mind. Again, going back to our previous conversation, that's a soft skill right there, having those conversations, and a book is very valuable for helping with that. These companies are finding value there. So what's another book there that you're seeing people pick up and run with?
Yeah, so one of the books we'll start groups off with in a lot of cases is called Power of Habit. That's by Charles Duhigg. That's really a book about how people form habits, good and bad, how to change habits. And it's really interesting because it's not just about personal or individual habits. It also talks about group habits and organizational habits. And it's got it's very well written. It has a lot of interesting stories and thinking on just how much habits influence what we do. And I think anyone who's worked in HR knows that especially organizational habits and individual habits really affect how to change things, how to make things better, or frankly are often the barrier to doing so. So that's certainly a lot of people, again, whether they're just starting out in their career or have been in the business 50 years, really get a lot of value out of that book. One of my personal favorites is called Essentialism. And that's really a book about doing the things that are most valuable and most impactful. And the fact is, modern life, there's so many things that we can be doing with our time, and people come in all different directions and are always asking for more. And the book is really about, it's almost a manifesto of how do you really look at your life, look at your priorities, and make sure you're spending your time and your energy in the right way. And there's, you know, lots of people refer to this concept in every different way, but this is really a book that hones in on it, gives a framework around it. And the author's kind of opening example is that his wife just gave birth to their first child, and his boss called him, you know, a few hours after the birth. His wife and baby are recovering in the hospital, and said, you know, we've got this really important client meeting just down the road. Can you make it? You know, baby's born. Sounds like your wife's just resting. And, you know, he says in his mind he knew that he shouldn't go, but he ended up going. And at the client meeting, you know, they mentioned that his wife just had a baby today, and the clients kind of don't say anything but look at him like, man, you've really got your priorities out of whack here. Something's not working here, and they didn't end up getting the business. And he thinks part of why is it just the values he was espousing were not in line.
Wow, interesting. So I've got two on the list that I've got to add there. I really liked The Power of Habit by Duhigg, and I had a really good friend that recommended Essentialism to me, because her favorite thing to say when we talked was, you know, I'm busy, busy, busy. That's what everybody always says. And she said, you know, one of the most powerful things for her after reading the book was getting down to here are the, you know, one or two things I've got to do today to consider it a success. And that's all. You know, I have 47 things on my to-do list, but the two things I have to do today to be successful are, you know, X and Y. And so, yes, absolutely. Good recommendations. Good stuff. And that's fine. Again, what I told you, we could sit here all day and just talk through the books that we love, the things that we're reading and value to be gained from these. And hopefully this kind of illustrates that point from some of these things, whether it's one of those powerful stories that makes us rethink how we're getting things done or not, or it's some of the research-backed pieces that are kind of woven through there to help us make the right decision. So, excellent stuff. Talk a little bit about book clubs at work. I know some companies, you know, might be interested in this. I've had people reach out, actually, because I wrote about the topic a couple of years ago. Some people might be interested in that. Others, you know, like, hey, it's loose structure. You can read if you want to. What are you seeing in terms of kind of trends in the space? Are people, you know, latching onto this idea? Are they using it for, I don't know. I mean, the question, you know, talk a little about what you're seeing there and what you've seen over time, because I'm curious about kind of the growth of this as a development tool and really allowing people to have some more more shared experiences in terms of learning, instead of having them sitting, you know, in a lecture hall listening to someone talk for an hour and counting that as training and hoping that it's effective.
Or even worse, sitting at their computer watching someone give a lecture, you know, 1,000 miles away. Really, really good question, Ben. So really the reason why we started our company, my colleague and I, or my co-founder and I should say, obviously love to read, talk about books. And there was an idea for, at the company we were working with at the time, there was an idea for, people said they wanted a book club, and we decided we would be kind of be the hosts and run it. And we kind of realized it was a fair amount of work to just run the book club, help pick the next book, make sure the conversation stayed effective. And we had this thought that maybe instead of setting up these in-person meetings and trying to schedule them and dealing with all of that headache, we could try to make a virtual book club and put the format online, so all the conversation would be there. So still similar to a traditional in-person book club, where everybody's reading the same book in the same period of time, but the interaction's a little bit different. So a virtual book club is centered around that online forum. So it's on 24/7, and people can participate from anywhere in the world. And at the time, for our company, that meant people from other offices could participate, and the time zones didn't matter, and scheduling wasn't an issue for the moderators anymore. So it's just much more convenient for everyone. Now, certainly, there's a lot of value to that in-person conversation, but what we typically see with companies is a lot of them will tell us that they used to have a book club, or one of their offices has a book club, but it's not available to everyone, or it faded out when the leader of the book club moved to a different office, or left the company, or became a manager and no longer had time to keep up with it. So really what we're seeing is that by essentially having a company outsource the management of the book club to us, they're able to actually offer this service. And that's not to say that there's anything. Companies can very easily commit some internal resources to make this happen as well, but the traditional volunteer in-person book club is generally not sustainable, is really what we're seeing.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I mentioned at one point we had kind of a library internally. We didn't have a book club. I run a book club for actually our local SHRM chapter years ago. I'd forgotten about that. I'd run a book club for the chapter, and some of those geographic limitations, because we had people that were outside the local area that heard about it. You know, they were on the email list marketing it for the chapter that wanted to join, because of the time, the place, you know, any of those other limitations geographically or logistically. And so I can see that being valuable to let people do that. And again, you think about things like online courses and pieces like that, they're so much more commonplace today than they were a couple years ago. And so people are more aware and willing to see those sorts of interactions as valuable. You know, I might not ever see you face to face, but we can discuss these key points from a book on a forum or something else together and still get a lot of value out of those interactions without ever once, you know, talking on the phone or meeting face to face. So I think those sorts of interactions, social collaborative learning, is more accepted today. And even the distance element of that, of never even being able to get around. My last company I worked for was a virtual company. So other than, you know, conferences or other key events, 99% of the time, we never actually saw anybody else we worked with. So it was, I can see in those sorts of instances, the more dispersed a company is, in some cases, those companies are the ones that have that need for building that really strong culture that still ties people back together, that makes them feel like they're a part of something bigger, right? If we go back to Dan Pink's book, Drive, if we want people to feel like there's a purpose or something bigger and more valuable than just the tasks they're working on, let's try to connect them into that culture, help them see the big picture, understand those things. And it could be that a book club that gives them that shared language, that gives them the opportunity to have those shared learning interactions with each other, might be the way to get that point across.
And that's absolutely right. And I guess the other thing one of the big challenges with traditional training, whether it's virtual or in person, is just getting people away from their desks. People have a set amount of time during the workday that they're trying to get their huge list of things done and all their projects and client obligations and everything else that might be on their plate. And one of the benefits of a book club is people actually are doing the learning in their own time. And part of what we look for when we're picking books is, are they well written? Are they interesting and enjoyable to read? Because if they're not, then people aren't going to take advantage of them in their own time. But from the company's point of view, you can select books that are enjoyable to read, that are also providing a lot of business value and actionable insights for people, and then have them do the learning over the weekend, basically. And people actually enjoy doing that because they're learning, they're growing. It's not reading a book doesn't take a huge amount of time, especially we'll typically read a book with a group either once every 2 months or once every 3 months. So it's not finishing a book every 2 weeks or something like that.
Very interesting. Good stuff. This has been really helpful, Zach. And man, this has been a lot of fun. Again, just to kind of nerd out a little bit on the topic of books, using them as a learning tool. They mean a lot to me. It's very apparent they mean a lot to you. You and I actually talk. I know you have something special that you want to offer to the podcast listeners. You want to share that?
Yeah, absolutely. So for people listening to this podcast, PBC Guru is offering to implement and manage a virtual book club with your company completely free for 6 months. And we hope this gives companies a chance to try out a virtual book club program and really see the value it offers. And to redeem, please just visit our website at pbc.guru. That's pbc.guru. And just fill out the contact form mentioning you heard us on the We're Only Human podcast and would like to talk further. And we're really happy
awesome.
To
That's
talk
great.
More about that. And yeah.
That's so cool. So thanks again for doing that. Is there anything else you want to leave my listeners with in terms of kind of a key takeaway or anything else you want them to, you know, that you got one last chance to just sell them on the idea of either books or of book clubs or learning? I'm just kind of curious, do you have anything you want to leave them with?
I think what I'll say is, and you mentioned this a little bit, Ben, is that I think a lot of companies, when they have a business need for whatever reason, whatever it might be, and they think they need training, a lot of them look to get a course. They look to get an instructor. But in a lot of cases, there's better written and more insightful content available in books that authors have spent years developing and researching that companies can get for, you know, less than $20 a copy. And they can get them on audio or ebooks to make it really easy for people to listen on their commute or whatever format's convenient for them, as opposed to taking actual time out of their day to sit in a lecture or an e-learning type training. So I think I would just encourage people to think about what types of learning does a book really cover well? And I think it's a lot of those soft skills and the number of titles that have really great content and insight are just incredible out there.
Excellent. Good point. Absolutely. Thanks again, Zach. This has been so much fun. I've really enjoyed it. I know everybody else is going to enjoy this as well once this goes live. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Ben.
Thanks for listening to We're Only Human with Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. To learn more and to listen to the show archives for We're Only Human and all the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network shows, go to www.h3hr.com. And remember to subscribe to the HR Happy Hour Network podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or your favorite podcast player app.